Welcome to a new episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast. And
Hello.
The streak is alive.
That's and right. Well.
I've lost count.
I have too. But it keeps going.
It is a going. Long.
It's like streak. The Energizer Bunny. Did you just make a long joke of his name?
No, it was pretty short. It wasn't that long of a joke.
F you guys.
Fair enough. I'm sure Long's never heard long jokes over the years.
Yeah, long, go long.
I've never heard.
It's just like, mark either. Jokes where like, oh, you hit the mark. Get it? Question mark? I just look at him like, no, that's fucking stupid.
Wow, your name has really common, extremely common now.
Yeah, it's true.
It's just like, okay.
I have like another friend named Mark, and I know two other Marks. So,
in wrestling, two Marks don't make a right.
And in wrestling, there's a terminology for fans who know a little too much. They're called Marks.
Really?
Yeah.
When an assassin is killing someone, they're called a Mark. That's
true. Hunters call their targets Marks.
They're Marks, yeah.
Yeah.
So. When Frank was here, I used to be like, can I be you with you? And he's like, can you be Frank with me? And I was like, yes.
Wrong.
Yes. So how's it going, guys?
How's
those weeks?
Very productive.
Very productive. That's good.
Very productive.
I would say very productive on my end as well, but also unproductive at the same time.
Yeah.
I didn't do jack shit today.
Sweet.
Yeah. I spent all week doing a mashup video of Transformers figures and Game of Thrones, and I think I'll get it done in time. It's actually extrapolating right now, so to speak, from the video editing software. And Houston's going to have their first local Godzilla Kaiju Club in a long time. There was one before, but now it's a monthly club that's going to be resurrected starting in May.
Nice.
So
resurrected.
Yeah.
I like that term.
Resurrected.
That sounds cool.
Yeah. So
Godzilla.
Foster that community. We're going to do, you know, movie watch parties, collectible show and tells, also fan art, fan fiction contest, fan film contests. So it'll be fun.
Cool. Yeah. Awesome. Big plans.
Yeah.
I'm busy. Yeah.
Jackie's sister came over this week, and every time she comes over, I try and get her to watch like a older movie that she probably wouldn't pick up on because she's like 20 and probably hasn't seen. I mean, she was born in 99 or 98. And so
the movie we're doing today, I mean, she was one when it came out. That's weird.
So, you know, last week I made her watch Last of the Mohicans. I was like, you have to watch this. And she watched the whole thing through. She's like, wow, that was a really good movie. When was it made? And I said, 92. She's like, wow, I would have never known. I said, that's one of the reasons, you know, we were inspired to redo our podcast, because there are a lot of young people like you don't, you know, watch a whole lot of movies and wouldn't otherwise know about this movie. So I was like, and then this week, I had her watch Boogie Nights because it was about to come off the free Vudu. And I was like, yeah, you're probably going to like it because Mark Wahlberg has a fake wiener in it and he pulls it out at the end. She's like,
oh,
what?
Lord.
It was funny because...
You did not sell it to her.
Yes. And I told her there's some jacked up dialogue in here. And, you know, I was like, yeah, Burt Reynolds literally walks up to Mark Wahlberg trying to cast him as a porn star. And he's like, did you come here to... Did you want to pay me jack?
I don't think I could comfortably watch that with my sister-in-law.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird, man.
I only remember the Sister Christian scene.
Yeah. You know,
the fake drumming scene.
Mm.
And then...
when he sings The Touch?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then all of, no, he was singing Sister Christian. That's the name of the song. Sister Christian, you know.
Oh, he sings that too. Oh.
Yeah. And then all of Heather Graham.
Oh, yes. All of Heather Graham. Roller Girl.
Yes. All of Roller Girl.
Yes. Mm. I wouldn't pick Julianne Moore for the role that she was in, but I guess it works out. She's supposed to be like this mother figure, the underlying thing.
All I know is that thing we've had too many Boogie Nights mentions on the show the last few weeks.
It's true.
You've been a weird obsession with that movie.
Yeah.
Now,
I'm going to have to watch you. Like,
he watched it, so it's getting it out of his system.
It's a little creepy.
John C. Reilly's in there, and I feel like John C. Reilly's the same person in every single movie for the most part. He's got nunchucks. And then he's like, how much do you squat? He's like, I squat more than that.
I don't know. I think his most different role is Gangs of New York.
Yeah.
He's not the same in that.
Yeah, definitely
pretty,
not.
Pretty,
I forgot
pretty
about
bad that. Dude in that. But So we, it's official now. We already knew it was going to be official, but we are part of the Comicpalooza podcast program.
Yes.
And in doing so, we have to talk Comicpalooza a little bit because it's part of the program. So people that live in Houston, that's a big comic convention here in town on May 10th, 11th, and 12th this year at the George R. Brown Convention Center. So we'll be doing a live show from there. I don't know if we're quite ready to announce the movie we're doing. I mean, I guess we could. We're going to be talking 20 years of The Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
At Comicpalooza. So that should be fun. And look back at how the prequels got started. They announced a huge guest this week. Long just talking, doing a Game of Thrones video. They announced Emilia Clarke is going to be there. That's huge. I mean, her autograph tickets sold out quickly. She's, of course, the mother of dragons in Game of Thrones, and mm-hmm. she's Kira in Star Wars, and she was in Terminator Genesis. So she's got her geek cred for sure. And really, really good get for Comicpalooza. That's a huge name. That should be exciting that she's coming to Houston. And people should be excited for it because it's right in the midst of the final season of the show when she'll be there. So Game of Thrones is going to be red hot. So that should be really cool. And so far, they've announced a lot of the cast of the Animaniacs, actors. Star Wars novelist Timothy Zahn is going to be there. Billy Zane, the Phantom himself.
Yes.
Babylon 5 fans, Mira Furlan is going to be there. She also was in Lost.
She looks so weird without the alien makeup.
Yeah, mm-hmm. looks completely different. She was also in Lost. A few actors from Lost have been announced. So it's starting to shape up to be a good show again, it looks like. There's still a lot more announcements, I'm sure, to come.
Lost is lame.
Oh, come on now.
Sopranos is number one.
Dan Juergens, longtime Superman writer, is going to be there. That's really cool.
Isn't it Kurt? No, it's Dan. You're right.
Yeah, Dan. He's going to be there. I might get my Death of Superman graphic novel signed by him, maybe, since he'll be there. So some good lineup. Neil Adams is there. He's kind of an asshole, but he'll be there. Signing. Chris Claremont, longtime X-Men writer, he's going to be there, too. So let's not forget the comic book side of this besides the actors and famous people that'll be there.
Yeah, it's easy to get mixed up in that.
Yeah. And, and we'll see who else they announce. Just because I'm running the podcast program, I have no inside information. I really don't. People ask me all the time who's going to be there. I really don't know.
I had someone ask me if I had a back door access so that they could see Emilia Clarke, and I said, no, absolutely not.
I'm sure she's going to be highly protected.
Yes.
You know, if I was Emilia Clarke, I'd protect those assets.
Assets.
Yeah. That was a joke. Yes. That was a bad pun there.
Bad pun.
Yeah. Speaking of live broadcasts, we have one coming up. Before Comicpalooza. Go ahead.
No, well, are you all right?
You have the floor, Long.
Misfit. Are we done with Comicpalooza?
Yeah. Sure? Okay. Misfit Toys.
Yes, we're doing a special broadcast episode from Misfit Toys, thanks to Daniel, the owner. And we'll be sitting down with him and throwing some questions, asking him some interesting collectible stuff that he's seen go through his shop. And he's got some stories to tell. Lots of stories.
And we'll be continuing our Space and Beyond month here, which starts today. And it'll go all the way to the end of this month to the release of Avengers Endgame. And we'll be doing at Misfit Toys. Right now, unless we flip-flop the movies, we're scheduled for District 9 that week, which is a really cool sci-fi film. So it would be a good film to talk about. And a room full of really cool toys and stuff. Mm-hmm. Misfit Toys, for people who don't know, is just a retro toy store. There's probably nothing you can't find there or Dan won't find for you if he can do it. I've actually never stepped foot in his shop, but I have seen what he has to offer at conventions before. And I've talked to him briefly. You know him better than I do. He probably doesn't even know who I am, even though I've talked to him a couple times. And so a really cool toy store here in Houston.
Didn't I buy the Arnold toys from him?
You may have. I know I bought stuff from him before myself.
I think I bought it. The Jack Slater. You found the Jack Slater. And then he had a Terminator, an old Terminator toy, and I bought that from him.
But I spent a lot of money on Transformers toys from him.
Mm-hmm.
I spent $10, I think, on those. They don't hold their value as well as Transformer toys, which is cool for me because I can get a little bit more. I'll take the bang for the buck. But maybe I'll splurge on a really nice Terminator action figure. So maybe 20.
They have a ton of those alien toys.
Yeah?
The Xenomorphs and all that. Yeah. Yeah.
So that'll be cool. It's coming up in a couple weeks on April 13th at Misfit Toys here in Houston. So we'll be bringing it to you live from Misfit Toys.
Yes.
I repeated myself within the same sentence.
Yes, if you want to see how we do our recordings, just show up. We'll do a little Q&A.
It's almost kind of like...
And we promise we'll have pants on.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. You can't
leave... Unlike right now. No,
yeah.
But, we'll do our show, do our thing, talk to Daniel. If we have a few people there, we'll do a little Q&A towards the end and have some fun with it. It should be a good time.
Yeah, show up at 5:30.
And bring me some beer, because I get nervous talking in front of people. So, now I'm saying,
you get nervous?
Yeah.
It's okay, I'll bring some scotch.
Yeah, just a few whiskey shots, I'll be ready to roll. Let's do this show, guys. No, I'm excited, it should be fun. It's like, you know.
I've never been in the shop, that's cool.
Yeah.
You should maybe show up.
I've driven past it, but I've never gone in it.
To show up at 5 just to look around.
Yeah, I plan on being there as soon as I can get there. So that'll be a good time. I'm looking forward to that.
Yarp.
In a couple weeks, as we're bringing it to you on the Rebel Radio Podcast. So let's get into today's show, shall we?
Shall we? We shall.
I need some excitement, shall we?
All the announcements taken care of.
Yeah. And
Download this.
What have you guys watched, streamed, consumed, put into your brains this week?
I watched John Carter. Me and my wife were looking for something to watch.
That's
and we're
a good movie.
Going back and forth.
Highly
and
underrated movie.
I saw it was on sale for rent, and it was like $2. And I'm like, hey, you got to watch this movie. It's actually really good. It was supposed to be a trilogy. You know, Mark always says that, you know, if they had renamed it John Carter from Mars, it would have done better, and arguably so. And we watched it, and I said, it's got a little bit what you want. I was like, you like romance. It's got romance in it. You like magic. It's definitely got that in it. It's got what I want. It's got some Western stuff in it. It's got some action and sci-fi. I said, so it's all of that all in one. And I was like, you got to watch it. So... she really enjoyed it.
Vastly underrated movie. It had three things going against it. Timing, coming out in January, is always a bad idea, unless you're a Marvel movie. Two, Taylor Hitch just isn't a marketable star. I get what they were trying to do, go with the unknown star, a young hot actor, and make him a thing, but he's just like, he's not a likable guy in his face. He doesn't smile. He just doesn't. It's hard to market him.
Kind of stoic.
And then the title of the film, you know, just... John Carter, just people were like, what is this? But it was good, though. I really enjoyed it. Maybe a little on the long side. They maybe could have edited maybe 15 minutes out of it, made it a little bit shorter. But overall, I think it's a really good movie, you know. And it's a shame it didn't do better, because those are such a great series of books. It would make really incredible movies if they're ever all filmed, you know. But who knows if we'll ever get them nowadays.
Yeah.
You know.
Bought into the Spider-Verse. Really is good decision.
You hadn't seen it yet, had you?
I had not.
I haven't either.
Yeah. And we'll have to have a movie night one night.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I rewatched it this week, man, and I love it so much every time I watch it.
It's really good.
Yeah.
Good origin story.
Is it Spider-Man 2 good?
Oh, yeah. It's better.
I don't know.
Because it's got Nicolas Cage as a voice in there.
It is a true just love letters to comics. To the character of Spider-Man, to Stan Lee himself in so many ways.
Did it win an Oscar this year?
It did win Best Animated Feature. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like that meme with McMahon in there where he's like surprised and then very surprised and then it looks like he's about to have a seizure.
Yeah, speaking of which.
Nicolas Cage came in there and then he was like that third face of McMahon in that meme.
Yeah, and...
Caster Troy!
Looking forward to WrestleMania next weekend.
Personally. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They've started listing WrestleMania and Royal Rumble like clips and videos on Vudu.
Yeah.
I looked and I saw Brock Lesnar on a cover or something on Vudu, and I'm like, wow, they're release it post.
It's going to be a history making WrestleMania because it's the first time the women are closing the show.
Wow.
They have the main event this year. It's a triple threat match between Charlotte Flair, Becky Lynch, and Ronda Rousey.
I was hoping Ronda would be in that mix.
Trish Stratus and Lita are going to be at Comic-Palooza.
Mm. Oh, I saw that.
Nice.
I stood as close as you and I are sitting to Lita back at when WrestleMania was at the Dome.
Yeah.
In 2000. And I went to the, what do they call it, All Access? Is there like their WrestleMania show? And I'm standing there like trying to like look where Frank was. I was with Frank. I didn't know where he was. And I turn around and Lita is like right behind me sitting there. And her handler's like, do you need some help? And I was like, oh, no, I was just looking at my friend. And Lita's like, oh, it's okay. He can just stand there. He's not bothering me. So, like, Lita spoke to me. Wow. Yeah. Because yeah. I think they thought I was being a creeper, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I was just, I didn't realize where I was standing. I'm like looking for Frank. Because, you know, you didn't have cell phones back then. So, yeah.
Speaking of download this, you'll be proud of me, Mark.
All right.
I actually sat down and watched Love, Death, and Robots. All of it.
Did you? I haven't finished it yet, so you watched all of it.
I watched all of it, and I have to say that there was not one boring story in there. Maybe one. But other than that, it was just a fantastic ride. My favorite one was, a couple of favorites were Lucky 13, where it's so photorealistic animation. It's about this ship, this dropship, science fiction dropship, that keeps killing its crew by some weird bad luck.
Yeah. I don't know if I watched that one yet.
Yeah. And it's a really good short story.
Yeah.
And then there's one about, it's a 2D animation. It looks like a traditional Disney cartoon, and it's three farmers defending their land against an alien horde, and they're driving mechs, you know, to defend by defending their land. It's nice. Really cool.
Yeah.
And then a kind of an artistic one that I really liked was Azure Blue, and it's 2D as well. But yeah, a lot of great stories in it. The first story is extremely good. You saw the first episode, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I need to finish it, man. I liked it. It kind of made me, like I said, it's the people behind it are hoping to get a heavy metal remake made, and so they did this, and it kind of made me kind of excited for a heavy metal remake if they can do it in this style. And of course, as I mentioned last week, a friend of the show, Naomi, she wants us to do heavy metal, and she wants to come on the show and talk it with us. So that'd be kind of cool. So I told her, like, let's get through Comic Palooza sometime and. Late May, early June, maybe we can do that with her. Because it is, heavy metal is definitely an adolescent fantasy film, but it's also kind of a fun movie, too, in a lot of ways. Take it for what it is at the time for 11-year-old perverts. That's what the film was designed for.
Yep.
Yeah, and next month I am actually going to do a three-part ranking from the worst to the best Godzilla movies.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll give it to you in audio form.
Heck yeah, dude.
And then I'll do a video form of it. So it's going to be from number 34 through 20, then 20 to 10. So
that's how many films are 34? 11.
Yeah, and then the top 10 as the final part. Yeah. So, yeah.
Is Matthew Broderick's Godzilla going to be last?
No, actually the anime trilogy is going to be last.
Oh, okay.
Second to last.
I really like that movie. Whenever it first came out, I just the toys.
Okay, we're done.
I had the toys, man. The toys.
The 98.
And then Green Day came out with the Godzilla Brain Stew.
It did version. Have a good soundtrack, man. Yeah. Like Rage Against the Machine is on the soundtrack.
Yeah. Yes.
The worst Godzilla movie is actually Godzilla's Revenge because it was just a clip show. You know, so
stock footage.
Yeah,
footage.
Exactly. It won terrible monster that had the most annoying roar ever. Yeah, it was terrible. Anyways.
Yeah. Man, I rewatched Spider-Verse again. I love it, man. I just can't get enough of that movie. It's the first time probably since Fury Road came out that there's a movie that's come out that I just keep absorbing it all in. Like, I see something different in Spider-Verse every time I watched it. I didn't realize that Stan Lee apparently is in the movie like 60 times. There's the one,
just one.
No, there's the one obvious cameo, but like, if you watch the featurettes, he's on school buses, he's in windows, he's like all over the place in the film.
Okay.
There's another obvious cameo where Spider-Man is running, he walks by him and Stan Lee's on a phone, but it happens fast, and I thought, so now it's making me want to keep watching it, trying to find these Stan Lee's in it. Apparently it's like 60 times he's in there.
Wow.
And it's an incredible film. You know, other than that, I've been playing a lot of Red Dead Redemption 2 still, because that game, man, I'm telling you, that game will absorb your life. It's so in-depth, but it's really, really remarkably well done. And I did watch, because remember last week I watched Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah.
So I did watch Conan the Destroyer. I had to watch the second one. And
that sorceress chick is hot.
Yeah, but the movie, it's like, it almost has like a 90s action feel to it, even though it's made in the 80s. So it's like really kind of cheesy.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the first one made money. It was rated R. So they're like, well, let's make it more accessible to everyone else and make it kind of goofy. So it's kind of goofy and just ridiculous. You know,
Rated R?
No, it's I think it's PG, but cause I don't know if PG-13 was out.
No.
It might be PG-13.
No, Temple of Doom started, though.
So maybe it is PG-13 then.
Mm-hmm. No, what? No.
No, yeah, because Destroyer didn't come out yet. I mean, it came out before Temple of Doom. Yeah.
PG-13.
So, yeah. So, it probably should have been PG-13, but, you know, it's probably PG.
A hard PG.
Yeah, and it's Temple of Doom. It's just more goofy. Arnold has a lot of one-liners in it. You know, they gave him more lines. Yeah. And, but it's not terrible. You know, you take it for what it is.
It's a mixed bag.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, but they're fun movies. And I just had been wanting to kind of see him again. That's why I picked up that copy of Matt Price books. And I was like, hey, you know, good nostalgia stuff.
Not bad. You know, not a bad pickup.
Where does our Arnold expert, where do Conan movies rank for you and Arnold? Are they in the top 10?
They're in the top 10. Okay. At least both the first of them? One. No, not the both. Not both. The first one.
Yeah.
I mean, I figure you've got to put at least Conan as number 9. Or
well, they launched his career to superstardom in a lot of ways. Yeah. But because before he did Terminator.
And, not a whole lot of dialogue. They did it kind of like they did Terminator. They gave him a few lines and... The lines that he had are very memorable, and they're probably the best parts of the movie.
Yeah.
Crush your enemies.
And he legitimately looks the role.
Lamentation of the women.
You know, he legitimately looks the role, based on Frazetta's drawings and things like that from the Marvel Comics and things. So he does look the role. And even Jason Momoa did look the role in the remake a few years ago.
Was it Momoa or Taylor Kitsch?
It was Momoa who did the remake, yeah.
I thought it was Taylor Kitsch. No,
and it's not terrible either. It's not a terrible film, the remake. You know, it is what it is.
Yeah. Conan was the one movie that Momoa almost quit acting.
Yeah.
Really? Why? Yeah.
Because he's tired of playing the barbarian tough guy.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. He got tired of, you know, doing the, Drogo.
Yeah, because he did Drogo in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, and then doing Conan after that. And,
yeah. Then there was some other film he was cast as, like, the tough guy. Yeah, I remember reading that. He just didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
You know? So, but yeah, good stuff.
Guess he's not like Danny DeVito. They're like, we need a ringmaster. Okay.
Dumbo did not do well. It's only $46 million this weekend.
Good.
Shouldn't Disney just make live action versions of some of their underdog films? Like maybe
Oliver and Company?
Oliver and Company.
Dark Cauldron?
Dark Cauldron,
Sword in the Stone.
Dude, I love the Black Cauldron. Black
Sword in the Stone.
But yeah, I love that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, Black Cauldron.
Yeah.
Soon, the Black Cauldron.
It's just like, I don't know, live action Disney. And then,
the really good films that are coveted.
Well, they're doing it. We got Aladdin and a Lion King coming out this year. I think
the Black Hole is back in production. Yeah.
A new live action version?
Yeah. Either that or it's a 20,000 Leagues. One of those two.
Maybe both of them. That would be cool.
Yeah.
You know what I almost watched this week?
What?
The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Why?
I saw that movie.
I actually don't mind... Sean Connery's character in it.
Alan Quatermain.
Yeah.
It made him retire from acting.
Really?
Yeah. He was so disappointed the way that movie turned out. It made him retire. He's like, I'm done. He goes, if these are the kind of roles my agents can get me, I'm done. Yeah.
Or get a new agent, Sean. That little...
Dude, if you've ever read the comics, you realize how bad the movie is. It's really not good.
I know it's not that great.
And they were hampered by fucking copyright lawyers. Yeah. They couldn't get Dracula... So they had to create their own.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just
a Hyde. Mess. They had Hyde.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah. Oh, well.
It's probably more entertaining than the Dark Universe attempt with the Mummy with Tom Cruise.
Possibly. Yeah. Oh, poor the Mummy.
On to the feature.
On to the feature of the week. A movie that is, man, I'm watching this. I'm kind of feeling old watching it because I'm like, wow, this movie's 20 years old now. how the time flies. But The Matrix hit theaters 20 years ago today while we're recording, March 31st, 1999.
It was 97.
No, it's 99.
99.
It started production in 97.
Yeah. Didn't Phantom Menace come out the same year?
Yeah, same year.
With a higher budget, too.
Yeah. And
private budget, private money.
Yeah.
So
The Matrix hit theaters in 1999. I saw it in theaters. Did you guys?
Yes.
I did not see it in theaters.
You're probably a little young.
I had to wait until it came out.
Man, this movie was a game changer when it hit. It blew people away, I would say. I think that's not being cliche. This movie really got people talking. It hit theaters, and it was a phenomenon. I think I saw it a couple times in theaters, actually, because this was that type of movie that people were telling their friends about. They were going back and seeing it, and it became a box office hit over the weeks it played in theaters because it came out of nowhere. Star Wars hype is everywhere in the spring of 99, waiting for The Phantom Menace to come out. And here's this science fiction movie with Keanu Reeves in it that no one had any idea what it was, and it just took the world by storm.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
That's a good way of putting it. I mean, it's...
The most successful cyberpunk movie, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a fair statement, and definitely the most popular Wachowski movie.
Yeah.
You know, Assassins went to...
Well, they only wrote the script for that. Well, yeah. The film started out, they wrote the script for Assassins, and they sold it, and it did pretty well. You know, it starred Sylvester Stallone, Antonio Banderas, and it did pretty well at the box office. So it allowed them, the studio said, okay, you can direct this other script you wrote for Bound.
Yes.
Which was a, like a lesbian murder thriller or something?
Yeah, I've never seen it. Very small budget, $3 million.
But it did well at the box office again. So the studio, the Wachowskis had some leverage here, and they're like, well, we really want to make this science fiction movie. And at first, Warner Brothers, or a couple of the studios told them, no, we don't know what this is. We don't understand it. We're not sure what it is.
And luckily for them, they had all these elaborate storyboards, which they were able to
prepare. They got Jeff Darrow, comic book writer, to storyboard the entire film, basically, for them. And Warner Brothers said, okay, you know, we'll do it, but we're not going to put all the money towards it. So they got Village Roadshow Pictures to co-finance the film so that if it wasn't successful, Warner Brothers didn't have to pay so much money for it. So the Wachowskis were able to get the film finally made. And they did a lot went into the making of this film. You know, they made the actors read several books to understand the philosophies of the film.
4 books.
Extensive training that was at first only 4 months, but then how do you say his name? Wu Ping.
Yeah.
The choreographer. He said, no, I need more than 6 months. So he ended up training for like 6 months because he said the actors were out of shape. And some of that was Keanu Reeves also got hurt.
Yeah.
He had to have neck surgery.
Neck fusion.
So it made the film making last a little bit longer.
But he was a trooper. He did all of his hand moves and trained that way until he could kick again. But yeah, he couldn't feel his legs because of that injury.
Yeah.
So really couldn't kick throughout the whole time.
So, and all this started in 97, getting this film made. And it finally goes into production in like April of 2008. After all the training, getting all the special, they had
not
to
2008.
Hmm? I mean 1998. Sorry, 1998. And they created new special effects for this film. Of course, we'll talk about bullet time here in a little bit. So that took time too. Whenever they special effects companies received the script, they're like, "Well, how are we going to do this?" They spent almost a year developing that technology just to make this work. But they had a backup plan if it didn't work. And I guess we'll talk about bullet time now. Because they had an idea where they were going to set up multiple cameras and all this and film Keanu bending backwards from different angles, and they were just going to splice it together if they couldn't get the CGI to work right. And so they did have a backup plan, but they were able to create that technology, which is possibly the most famous thing that The Matrix is known for now.
And not to mention it's dated by it.
Yeah.
And it was
you don't see people use it
so
anymore.
So many times, Scary Movie, Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo.
Not just spoofed, but also just homaged in a film we love like Equilibrium, homages it with the use of gun kata.
Yeah.
Matthew Vaughn's Kingsman films.
Yeah.
You know, they use the idea of wire work and moving the cameras around, you know, so the film, and those are recent. So even today, there's The Matrix's influence is obviously still there in the action films. And, but bullet time is created for this film to give it a sense of this alternate reality where these characters can move quickly because they're basically inside a computer program, so they can do anything they want.
Yes.
Which also leads to my one beef with the film, which we'll talk about in a little bit. You know, but overall, this movie got made because a bunch of people believed in it. And Lawrence Fishburne read the script and says, I don't understand why people don't understand. This makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
He he thought the movie was too smart. People weren't going to understand for that reason.
Yeah, he thought it was too smart for a summer blockbuster. He's like, how is a movie this intelligent getting this much money put into it?
Mm-hmm.
And luckily it justified itself once it was released and once Fox and wasn't Fox involved?
No, it was all Warner Brothers.
Warner Brothers, I'm sorry. Once Warner Brothers saw the final cut, they were very pleased how it turned out.
And Carrie Ann Moss, who had never really acted before, this is the first movie she was in. She had done some small things, and this was her big break. And she's still, to this day, very thankful for the Wachowskis giving her this break.
Yeah, versus Janet Jackson.
Yeah.
Well, Janet Jackson couldn't do it because of her album.
Okay, yeah, and that's how the movie almost starred Will Smith as Neo and Val Kilmer as Morpheus.
Yes.
And Will Smith just thought he wasn't a good enough actor. He turned it down out of respect for he thought the script was too good. And he went on to make The Wild Wild West, which was a big flop for him, but he said he had no regrets because he respected Keanu Reeves.
He still got paid for
a while. Yeah. Yeah, Will Smith went on to have just a fine career himself. I don't think he's missing anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, I can't imagine this movie with Will Smith because you watch it and you automatically know Keanu Reeves is Neo, Lawrence Fishburne is Morpheus, Carrie Ann Moss is Trinity. You don't see anyone else playing those characters, even though here in a little bit we're going to have some fun with it and cast who we would cast if they made this film today in 2019. But, I watched it last night, and I think it holds up really well. The only thing it doesn't hold up is I need to buy it on Blu-ray because it looked pretty bad on DVD.
Speaking of which, I mean, The Matrix was the number one driver of DVD sales. Mm-hmm.
And first DVD sell a million copies.
Yeah, and also it helped drive PlayStation 2 sales.
Mm-hmm.
When PlayStation 2 was first released, you know, The Matrix, there wasn't very many games on the PS2 at launch, and The Matrix was one of the top-selling software or mm-hmm. movies for the PS2.
Yeah.
So almost everyone who owned a PS2 had The Matrix in their library.
I remember that. Yeah. I want to say The Matrix was one of the first DVDs I probably owned. Yeah. I remember buying it, wanting that movie. Fair.
I think I owned the DVD when it first came out.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the one I still have because it's just a regular DVD.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
And it was such a massive success that it went on to spawn two sequels, a anthology of animes.
Yes.
Called The Animatrix, which are those are hit or miss. There's three or four of them that are really good, and a couple of them that are kind of like, eh, on
they
those.
They give you some good backstory on The Matrix.
You know, yeah. And the sequels, of course, you know, we could do episodes on them themselves there. You know, the sequels took a lot of flack for not being as good as the original because they felt kind of forced. But, you know, really, they're not as bad as I think that people remember them. You know, there's some pretty good parts in Reloaded. Revolutions... is it as good, but it's also supposed to be the finale. I look at Revolutions, is it supposed to be like this 2-hour grand finale?
Far from terrible. Yeah, they're better than average.
Yeah, oh yeah,
they're
for
good
sure.
Movies. They're good, solid movies.
I think the fight scene between Neo and Mr. Smith at the end of Revolutions is awesome, you know, with them flying through the buildings and stuff. But we're talking the original film here, and a groundbreaking movie that is still feeling effects today on cinema and everything. Mm. And there's some neat things in this, like... The green tent when they're in the Matrix, mm-hmm. and then there's in the real world is all blue tent, you know, so to differentiate the two worlds from each other. And then the dojo scene is yellow to show that it doesn't take place in either. And there's some hokiness in that. That's one thing I was watching last night. I'm like, when they're doing all the kung fu stuff, it's like there's some real kind of cheesiness in it. And I think it's purposely because the Wachowskis were very influenced by Asian cinema.
Yes.
And Asian kung fu films have some hokiness in it. And Keanu even throws a Bruce Lee on there where he like licks his nose.
Yeah.
Thing Bruce Lee used to do. Yeah. And it's kind of funny watching it last night. I was like, this is kind of corny
in
parts.
Also, the Matrix world has more... it's more angular,
mm-hmm.
more right angles, you know, hardly any curves, you know?
That's one of my favorite parts. As soon as, like, even if I lose attention whenever I'm watching The Matrix and I kind of zone off, do other things, when I hear, I know kung fu, show me, I immediately stop what I'm doing, and I'm like, I'm watching this.
Yeah.
This is one of my favorite parts. I know kung fu.
Shoot, you know that scene where Morpheus did that super leap from one building to the other?
Yes. Yeah.
And then Keanu says, whoa, you know?
Whoa.
I remember sitting in the theater and everyone laughed when he said, whoa.
It's like, is that...
Yeah.
He says whoa a lot.
Well, and then he also asks a lot of questions. In the first 45 minutes of the movie, he has 88 lines. More than half of them are questions. Interesting fact.
I like it whenever he's like, how about I give you the finger... and you give me my phone call.
Yeah, there's a certain... I didn't realize watching it again that there's a certain, like, kind of dark humor throughout this film. Even the way Hugo Weaving delivers his lines as Mr. Smith, mm-hmm. they're kind of over the top, kind of like just really purposely enunciated really strongly, kind of cheesy.
Well, he purposely did that. He didn't want to sound too human, and he didn't want to sound too much like a robot. He wanted to sound something different entirely, and I think he gets that across.
Yeah, no, he does a good job, and he's another one that this movie made him a star. Hugo Weaving went on to a huge career after this, got cast in Lord of the Rings films, and went on to play Red Skull in Captain America, and he's had a good career since then. So The Matrix helped launch careers of a couple of people. Yeah, right. He's in V for Vendetta.
Yeah.
You know, which is also a Wachowski's production. They didn't direct it, but they produced that film. You know, and
Well, I mean, whenever he's describing the human race as vermin, and that you just consume and consume until all natural resources.
Which there's my one beef in the film. It's that scene. Okay. There's a scene in this film where Keanu Reeves is breathing heavily right after the jump scene. And he says, is that really air you're breathing? It's all your mind, right? So he asks him, if you die in the Matrix, your mind makes it real. So if Morpheus has his shit together, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when he's being tortured, why is he feeling all that pain and blood. He just told Neo it's all in your mind, but yet here he is feeling all this. And that scene bothers me. Like, Morpheus is a guy who has his shit together. He should just be sitting there in a chair like, whatever, you know? And that scene kind of irritates me. Even when I saw it years ago, that scene always bothered me. Because, like, wait a minute, you just told Neo it's all in your mind, but here you are being tortured. And or maybe they should have put some explanation there as, like, he did it on purpose to make the agents think that he was buying into their torture.
I know they gave him a shot. I mean, Neo took a pill, and they were able to locate him, you know, right, by using the blue pill. So I'm guessing, if you consume something in the Matrix, that it right, goes and affects.
See, so maybe that's what it is. They're asking you to suspend your belief a little bit and go with that. That's interrogation scene, but that scene always bothered me a little bit.
I can see that. Yeah.
I had a friend, and he was like, it left quite an impression on him, and he, you know, saw a lot of religious symbolism.
Oh, there's a lot in this. Yes.
And he was like, whoa, and he was telling me about, you know, Jesus did this, and Neo did that, and Jesus was this, and Neo did that too. And I'm like, yeah, that's cool. Mm-hmm. That's cool. I can see
that. A lot of philosophical things in this too, like beliefs and, like, you know, are we really here? What's the purpose of our lives? You know, a lot of that's in this, you know, people that ask about the great question, what's the meaning of life? And a lot of that is in the Matrix. Like, what are we doing all this for? You know, and it does ask all those questions.
Yeah.
Even especially in the sequels, especially in Reloaded, there's a lot of that in there, you know, questioning existence and things like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Wachowskis, openly talked about that they wanted to challenge people's thoughts, and but they also just wanted to make a really good science fiction film too.
Yes.
You know, they weren't trying to, like, they just thought, like, yeah, we did base it on this stuff, we wanted to challenge people's thoughts, but we also weren't trying to push any buttons either. You know, they did kind of say that, like, hey, we're just trying to make a good movie. Mm-hmm. You know, and they did, you know, and a movie that I think 20 years later is still remarkably good. Most of the special effects to me held up really well. I think the bullet time looks cool. Some of the wire work's a little funky now. When Trinity, at the beginning, you know, Carrie Ann Moss did a lot of her own effects. When she's jumping through the window and stuff, it looks a little, like, dated, you know, for the time compared to wire work now.
Yeah.
But for 20 years old, it still is pretty good considering the budget they had for this film.
Yeah, I agree.
You know? Another thing, I my only other beef with The Matrix 2 is is Cypher being the traitor. The whole film is scripted so well, except for that. It's a trap, you know, to have that traitor in the film. It's just like, you know, it's predictable, you know, and that's probably it. And Joe, what's his actor's name?
Pantaleano.
He's really, like, the guy overacts in every film he's in. He kind of annoys me sometimes. Mm-hmm. Even in Christopher Nolan's Memento, which is a great film, it's just he's such an overactor.
And Sopranos.
Yeah, and he's not a bad actor, but it's just like he's very screen-chewing. Very screen-chewing, yeah. But other than that, I think The Matrix is almost... It's an 8 out of 10 for me easily, you know, I think.
Shoot.
You know.
I'd give it a 10.
I'd give it a 10 just because of the effect it had.
Yeah.
Yeah. No lower than a 9.
Yeah, no lower than a 9.
Because it just blew my mind. I've never seen a movie like that before. Didn't expect it to be so good. The special effects and the action was so well done for the budget it had.
Right.
You know, and...
And rewatching, I forgot how visually fantastic it is in so many scenes. Like,
and there's a multi-layered storytelling. Yeah.
Just as the movie slows down, it gives you another really remarkable visual scene that just... And you remember it always. Like, when I was editing last week's episode together and getting the trailer ready that I drop in there, just watching the trailer, I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot about the helicopter scene. Yes. And stuff like that. You know, you remember all this stuff, and it's just so cool. And its influence is still being heard today. And but a good movie that deserves to be celebrated on its 20th anniversary for sure. And if you haven't watched it in a while, go ahead and watch it again. And check it out. Any final thoughts on The Matrix before we have a little fun with The Matrix?
No. It's definitely one of the biggest movies I've ever seen in my life. One of the most memorable. And I have really zero complaints about it.
Yeah.
I gotta be except the guy. Except for the fact that my ex-wife likes it too. So I try not to watch it too much.
Yeah.
I have
issues.
I love it. I think it's great. I watched it over and over and over again once I first saw it. And I don't, it's one of those films I don't mind watching a couple times in a day. I could You know, it's definitely one of the, like you say, a top 10 films that you take with you on an island. It could make that list easy.
Yeah, I do love it too. Despite my two little small complaints I had with it, I don't want to make it think that those keep me from the film. But overall, overall, I do think it's a fantastic movie and I love it. And, you know, there's been some talks about Warner Brothers wants to reboot it, and I feel like leave it alone.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's a perfect product of its time. No reason to redo it or remess with it. But if they were to remess with it, we were going to have some fun with it. We normally don't do recasting because our buddies at Matinee Heroes, Craig and Alan, they always do recasting. But we're not really doing recasting. We're like, what if they made The Matrix today? Who would we cast in three or four of the major roles, and who would we have to direct it?
I know who can direct it for sure.
So let's start with who we would pick to direct this film.
I would pick the pair who did the Infinity War.
The Russo brothers?
The Russo brothers. I would pick them to direct it.
That's a good pick.
Yeah. Two minds to, you know, divide the creative challenges of a modernized Matrix, which I don't think needs to be modernized because I think it's pretty timeless at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, they could probably remaster the special effects.
Mm-hmm.
That'll probably be the only thing I do.
Yeah.
But other than that...
Right. Sure. Yeah. Well, yeah, we're just having some fun with it. Sure.
As far as directing, the Russo brothers... keep Damon Lindelof away from it.
Because, keep Lindelof away.
Yeah, he overreaches a lot, and none of that. If you want a coherent storyline, keep it away from Damon Lindelof. I mean, how do you screw up Prometheus?
I know.
Anyways. <Yeah.
laughs> I guess there's a way.
So who would you have direct this film?
J.J. Abrams.
You went with a safe pick.
I did. I went with safe for the...
My pick's pretty safe, too.
Who is it?
I went with Matthew Vaughn. Just because based on his Kingsman films and the wire work he did with him, I could see him pulling off the effect work in this.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I went with a safe pick, too.
Nice.
So, yeah, I went with Matthew Vaughn. So, but all three are capable of doing a movie like this.
Yes.
Let's start with Agent Smith. Who would you cast as Agent Smith in this movie? Well, I guess I'll start and we'll go back around this way. I picked two because there's Agent Smith. There's also his co-agent, right? So I picked Christian Bale and Brad Pitt. They seem kind of safe, but like I just feel Bale because like American Psycho has that creepy side to him.
Yeah.
And then Pitt, we all know Pitt can play a badass like agent, and he can do that voice where he's like sounds all serious. And
I would pick Josh Brolin.
For Agent Smith?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
He looked really good in Men in Black.
Yeah. 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 I haven't seen that one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I like the third one. He's good in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I heard it was good.
Yeah.
So I did this based off of if we were recasting in the late 90s, early 2000s, regardless of how these people look today. But I think
they can still... supposed to be recasting it today.
Yeah, I know. But I think this can still happen today. So I have Thomas Jane as Agent Smith.
Oh, yeah. That could still happen today.
Yeah. I think Thomas Jane could be a decent Agent Smith.
Okay.
Or Dave Bautista.
Bautista, yeah.
He played a Bond villain.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
So who would y'all cast as Trinity if made today?
I've got Kate Beckinsdale
as Too Trinity. Too old.
Yeah.
I was either going to pick her or Charlize Theron. She was my runner-up.
Hmm. But they're both too old. She was in Fury Road, but...
I mean, Charlize don't look it, though.
No, she doesn't.
Don't
that's
look
a supermodel
either.
Look. That's why.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know. You go, Mark.
I have Emilia Clarke.
Oh, yeah.
Emilia I think Clarke. She could play Trinity.
I think she's too short.
Maybe, but I think she could pull it off.
Hey, you know,
she could probably pull it off. Huh. Who would I pick? Trinity. Someone who can move, who can act, who could look scary.
Zoe Saldana?
No, she's in too many movies. Yeah. I can't think of it right now. Get back to it later. Who would y'all cast as Neo?
Well, I have... Well, for Morpheus and Neo, I have for Morpheus, I've picked Benedict Cumberbatch.
Morpheus, ooh,
yeah.
That's good.
I think... And then I picked Idris Elba for Neo.
Neo?
I reversed the races on it and went with that. Yeah. I thought they would play... They're both British. I think they would play off of each other really well. Because Cumberbatch and Elba are both really powerful personalities.
Yeah.
And man, could you see them going at it, Neo and Morpheus? Like, think about the kung fu scene with those two guys. It would be badass, you know?
That would be pretty cool. I was pretty adamant on having Eldris as Morpheus, but I went with the wild card, and I went with Wesley Snipes for Morpheus. So just a different personality.
Is he allowed to act anymore after tax evasion?
I know, right? I just thought, and Jack, I was telling this to Jackie, and she's like, why Wesley Snipes? And I'm like, because he's so out there, and he's so cool, and like hard-headed. It would be a different
I can see that, because like when this came out in 99, what had Lawrence Fishburne been in lately? And all of a sudden, it's like Lawrence Fishburne, and he's in this huge role, and he's really good, you know? Yeah. So yeah, no, I can see that. And, he could surprise people.
Originally, I was going to pick Brad Pitt for Neo, but I thought that was too cool of a pick. I thought Brad Pitt didn't belong in that role.
And considering him and Keanu Reeves are right now the same age, that'd be kind of weird.
So I went with Christian Bale as Neo. I feel like that's a safe pick because...
That's a way safe pick.
For Neo, I would pick... who is that? Who's the guy who played Kylo Ren?
Oh, Adam Driver?
Adam Driver. He'd make a good Neo. I could
see him as Neo.
Yeah,
and then for Morpheus, a mentor role... I would probably go with freaking Mark Hamill because he needs to be done right.
Mark Hamill?
Yeah. I want him to freaking teach without being so cynical and stuff.
I was going to say Yoda just to be funny.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That Mark Hamill leads perfectly into the news because we've got some news stuff. And then we're going to talk a little bit about Batman's 80th anniversary too here in a minute. But we don't have a lot of news, so we'll knock out the news first. So Mark Hamill's going to voice Chucky in the new Child's Play movie. He announced that yesterday. You know, it's funny with celebrities and social media. You know, some guys just get it and how to use social media. Mark Hamill's one of those guys. He's really, really witty on Twitter. He actually takes the time. He'll respond to people sometimes. He'll like people's tweets. He used a video yesterday, announced he's doing the voice of Chucky. And he gets it and how to use it. And he's a really smart guy. It's kind of cool. You know, I'm not really... Like, I'm not going to jump to go see Child's Play. It's not my thing. But it's cool that Hamill got this gig. You know, I could see he can bring a sinister cheesiness to it.
Absolutely. I mean, he's got practice with that.
Yeah. He did the Joker for years and done a phenomenal job with it.
You mentioned Phantom Menace earlier. It's Ewan McGregor's birthday today. Happy birthday, Ewan.
That just means he's old.
Yeah, he is old. Yeah. He just one more year older than playing a younger...
I might pick Gal Gadot. Gal Gadot
for Trinity. Trinity.
Oh yeah, that would be really so good. Pretty.
That's a good pick.
Yeah, Wonder Woman playing Trinity.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Either her or what was it? Kate Olsen.
Oh yeah, Kate Olsen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
did Scarlet Witch.
Scarlet Witch. I wanted to see her in an action role, rather than a magic role.
Yeah,
you know, so
magic.
Yeah. Emily Blunt would be good too.
Oh yeah, Emily Blunt.
Emily Blunt.
Yeah.
She could be a good Trinity. She's tough. I mean, she's already shown that in a few movies.
Yeah,
it's a good few. It's a good time for actresses right now. There's a few of them out there that would be really good at that role.
Mm-hmm.
So
you know, Sigourney Weaver would make a good Morpheus if we should have bend it.
Yeah.
I could see her in the mentor role.
Yeah, she did. She did fight a little bit whenever she. She was the leader of the Hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and even in Avatar, she was essentially a mentor to Sam Worthington's character.
That's true.
In a lot of ways,
Sam Worthington. Didn't he jack everything up, Sam Worthington?
Yeah.
I haven't seen him in a while.
Well, he's in the Avatar sequels, but yeah, he's notoriously hard to work with on set and kind of got himself in trouble with Hollywood, couldn't get hired because he couldn't.
That's generally the number one reason why you don't see actors anymore is because they become douche nuggets.
Yeah. He got a big I'm in the number one movie of all time. He got a big head on himself. So
makes sense.
But you know. So Disney is apparently evaluating the X-Men films. I read this. Basically that means like, yeah, we're evaluating them because they're in pre-production, but we're not going to make any of these. Let's be honest. Are they really going to make Channing Tatum with Gambit? Or make are they going to release is this new Mutants movie?
No one asked for a Gambit.
Yeah,
movie.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Are they going to make an X-Force movie? No. They're only going to do a Deadpool movie because they're really successful.
It's a proven success.
But Disney, let me tell you, they might make Deadpool because it's rated R, but Disney is going to do whatever they can to stay away from rated R films. They're not going to make a rated R X-Force film.
It might be a Touchstone picture. You know?
Yeah, exactly. They're not going to do it under the Marvel Universe banner for sure. So, you know, and it's funny when I read that. So Disney, yeah, we're evaluating, but basically we're going to throw them all out. I mean, we know that's happening. They're not going to.
Yeah, Kevin Feige knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to recast everything. They're going to launch the X-Men in some way.
I would like a Deadpool cameo in an Avengers film. Like, I forget who put the idea out there, but what if after Endgame is over, Deadpool is, like, running out onto the battlefield, and he's like, oh, man, I'm late. Man, I missed the fight.
Or Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe movie.
Oh, yes.
So I heard that's a really popular.
It's probably his best comic series ever.
Him dating Death.
Yes.
Making Thanos jealous.
He kills Stan Lee in the script.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the illustrators too, he kills them too.
So you know, Marvel Cinematic Universe is going full force ahead as we're getting more things announced. They're making an Eternals movie. I'm not real familiar with the Eternals. I guess Angelina Jolie is circling it. That's kind of how I feel about this. Like, okay. But I guess at the same time, 6 years ago, no one asked for a Guardians of the Galaxy movie, and we got one.
Yeah.
So I guess we have to trust what...
Or Ant-Man for that.
Yeah, matter. I guess we have to trust what Kevin Feige's doing, and hopefully it's good. No one's asking for a Shang-Chi movie either, but hey... It could turn out really great.
Yeah.
Apparently, they're talking to Steven Yeun from The Walking Dead to star in that. So,
it's going
to
be... Donnie Yen's too old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see where this next wave of Marvel films go. I really am fully expecting, if Marvel shows up at San Diego Comic-Con this year, you know, they've been so generous with us over the last 10 years of giving us a plan of what movies are coming. And for the first time ever, we really don't know past Homecoming. Or Spider-Man 2, what's coming out. We know they're making Black Panther 2. We know they're making Black Widow. We know they're making Guardians 3 and Doctor Strange 2, but we don't know when they're coming out. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking at some point this year, we're going to get that timeline again where they're going to make announcements and when these things are coming out, and we'll know more. So, you know, so hopefully. We'll see. But that's literally all the news I have.
See who the new guard of Avengers are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the new lineup. We'll there's a rumor today of a rumored Avengers movie. Mm-hmm. As well, that's under pre-production.
Well, yeah. I mean, Captain Marvel signed on for 7 films, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Shazam's coming out next weekend. Next week. Which I've heard a lot of good buzz on.
Yeah.
You know, it was a great family movie.
Good reviews. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I might try to see it. When are we recording? Friday night?
Yeah, we'll try. Yeah.
I won't see it till Saturday
if
I go see it. So. Yeah. Cool. All right, well, let's talk some Batman before we preview next week's film, just because this week is the celebration of 80 years since Detective Comics number 27 hit stores, and Batman came into our world. And so I have a few quick questions for you guys to celebrate Batman's 80th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
They're easy, not too difficult. What's y'all's favorite Batmobile design?
Ooh, the animated series.
I'll have to go with the first Tim Burton.
That's mine. I like the 89 Batman film. That's part of my favorite Batman
film. But I still have a close attachment to the 60.
Oh, sure.
68 Batman.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The big Cadillac.
Your favorite Batman costume design?
Ooh, that's a tough one. For a long time, I liked Clooney's. I really liked Clooney's.
Clooney's?
But then Bale's came out and...
Clooney's?
Yeah.
Well, with bat nipples?
No, that was Val Kilmer. That was bat nipples, that's Clooney. Right? That was Clooney.
They both had it.
Yeah,
but he had the card.
Clooney was the obvious one.
Really, I think my favorite movie is the Batman Returns one. It was more streamlined.
Yeah,
they took away all the, you know, the abs and stuff and made it more mechanical looking.
Yeah,
in Batman Returns.
And he had the he always had the breastplate, and that's why Catwoman stabs him in the side.
Yeah, yeah.
I know it's not the popular choice, but as far as costume design, I really like the version that Affleck wears. Not necessarily that version that Affleck wears in Batman vs. Superman, but I always like the gray with the black symbol kind of like painted onto the chest. Yeah. I've always liked that design on Batman.
I love the voice, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Good voice.
Yeah.
Personally, I was introduced to Batman through Adam West TV show.
Yeah, that's too. Yeah.
Same here.
Yeah.
My first time seeing it was the movie. With the shark repellent.
Oh, yeah.
Shark spray.
And running with the bomb and all that. Yeah.
The animated series is one of my favorites.
Oh, Batman animated series is one of my favorite things ever made in this planet. You know, yeah. So, favorite actor to play Batman?
Ooh.
Keaton, for me.
Keaton. I like Keaton, but
he didn't have an annoying voice.
Yeah.
I mean, he played Bruce Wayne as Bruce Wayne, and he played Batman as a different person. I mean, not drastically different as Christian Bale, but still different enough.
I like Bale.
Yeah.
That's my favorite. I'm not saying he's the best.
Bale's good. Favorite, yeah. He is a great Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
Bruce Wayne.
I like Bale because of how great those films are.
Yeah.
But I would have loved to have seen Keaton do that with great scripts like that. Mm-hmm. Not that the Burton films are terrible, but like but they're not the Nolan films. I would have loved to have seen Keaton with really great scripts like the Nolan films had. You know, that would have been awesome.
I just like what Keaton's just basic charisma about it, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's what I like about it.
Yeah, and it was so unexpected at the time. You know, imagine the internet was out in 1988. Dude, Keaton would have been crucified. You know, because there were magazine articles about it. No one liked him in the role. It was like, what? They thought Tim Burton was crazy. And then not only that, who's Tim Burton? You know, he wasn't really well known at the time. And what was Warner Brothers doing, giving this huge budget to this director that didn't know, like, anyone knew what he was? And, of course, he pulled off a phenomenal film that restarted the Batman fandom in a lot of ways. Because for a while there, Batman, unless you were into comics, had really kind of died off.
Actually, Kevin Conroy is my favorite Batman.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. Oh, that would be my fantasy pick to ever have at Comicpalooza. I think I'd have to get something signed by him.
Absolutely,
You know, if Kevin Conroy was there. I don't really go celebrity crazy getting signatures, but I would love to have, like, an animated Batman photo on the wall with Conroy signed it. You know, it'd be cool to have. But, yeah. So, favorite Joker, then?
Ooh, Mark Hamill.
Yeah, I'll go with Heath Ledger.
Yeah, I like Heath's performance a lot. I love what Hamill did in the role as a voice actor.
He was
scary. But Heath is just so phenomenal. You know, it's just it's just he pulls it off. He jumps off the screen at you in an unbelievable way.
Won an Oscar for it?
Yeah.
No. I killed a bus driver.
He unleashes in that role just.
You can't even tell it's Heath Ledger.
No.
How do you think Joaquin Phoenix would do?
He looks okay. I want to stay positive and keep my high expectations away from it. And I'm looking for just someone that'll pay respect to the role.
I mean, I'm expecting a trailer soon. I mean, I would imagine the movie's coming out in October. But I don't know. We'll see. Phoenix is a hit or miss completely as an actor for me. You know, sometimes he's good in movies. Sometimes I'm just like, I just don't, you know, he's a little weird.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, he wanted to sleep with his sister in Gladiator, so it's kind of fucked up.
That was the role, though. I mean, just as a person, he's really kind of strange. So we'll see, you know. I just feel like it's one of those movies that no one asked for, you know, so.
Scorsese produced it, didn't he? That's the funny thing.
By name. I mean, how much do he really do, though? You know, I wonder. And Todd Phillips is such an interesting choice because he's mostly known for, like, comedies and stuff, so.
We'll see.
Yeah.
I mean, if they have a passion for the character, then I'm sure it's in good hands.
Yeah.
That's the key to it. But if it's just
That's what it says.
Yeah, but if it's just a workaday director who's just getting a paycheck, then I might be worried, you know.
But 80 years is pretty phenomenal. I mean, where does Batman stand for y'all in the superhero? Is it DC's number one? It's got to be at this point even more popular than Superman. I would think.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because he doesn't have any powers. Yeah. And so, you know, you love his origin story because he, you know, he used his pain and his suffering and he channeled it into, you know, what he's doing as Batman.
Yeah, Superman's the gateway
for,
you know, comic books. Mm-hmm. And I think I could kind of see the same thing for young girls for Captain Marvel. Mm-hmm. She's kind of a gateway superhero for, you know, other comic books, too. But Batman, I mean, he's the bread and butter for.
I mean, everyone knows me, knows he's my favorite superhero.
I don't know what's going on right now for Batman.
No.
But.
Yeah, I have a Batman logo tattooed on me so people know I love Batman. Mm-hmm. My favorite DC character. Wolverine's my favorite Marvel character.
Nice.
It's cut and dry for me. And I love Batman, and 80 years is pretty phenomenal. They always do Batman Day at comic stores in September where they usually have giveaways and cool Batman stuff out. And Detective Comics number 1,000 hit this week on the anniversary. I haven't picked up a copy of it yet. It's like $10, man. It's almost the price of a graphic novel. But it's like that freaking thick, though. There's a lot of stories in it. So congratulations, Batman. You are 80 years old. He looks younger than us.
Yeah. they finally gave, what was it, Tom King helped create it, but who was the other creator?
Bill Finger.
Bill Finger is finally getting his name recognized.
Yeah.
Arguably, you know, he was modeled after Teddy Roosevelt.
Oh, yeah.
You know the story about Teddy, right?
What about him?
He was a vigilante. Teddy trained with the Indians, and he learned tracking techniques.
Oh.
And so he was so passionate about bringing people to justice, he had a gang called the Rough Riders, and they would go out at night, and they would hunt down criminals, and he'd beat them with his bare hands. He'd lasso them. He learned lassoing, and he'd bring them to justice. Yeah. Street justice.
Yeah. Someone made the mistake of calling, you know, in the saloon, of calling Teddy Roosevelt Four Eyes.
Oh, yeah?
And he punched him. One punch, knocked him out.
Nice.
That's a true story.
That's awesome. I had to do a paper on criminal justice system, and I somehow worked in on my third page Teddy Roosevelt and Batman.
Yeah.
And my instructor was like, I'm not sure why you felt the need to insert Batman into your paper.
It's fucking Batman. It's Batman. That's what you tell him.
He's like, I'm going to let this slide.
Because remember, if you can't be anybody, be Batman.
Be Batman.
Always.
Or be Teddy.
Yeah, or be Teddy. One Punch Man.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's...
He died in his sleep because Death was too afraid to take him himself.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
That's funny.
Teddy Roosevelt.
Death was too afraid to face him.
Anyway, so what are you saying? Oh, I was going to preview next week's movie.
Yeah.
Space and Beyond Month continues as... this movie that we did today took place in the cyberverse. Now we're going to go into space itself because it's space and beyond.
Yeah,
I'm trying to find space. Something. Yeah, but we're going to talk. Dude. We're going to talk. To me, it's an '80s classic, and I know some people maybe feel different, but we're going to talk Enemy Mine.
Marooned on a desolate planet, he is a soldier. Alone with his enemy.
Run!
Awesome. Don't you understand English, toad face? I don't love you and you don't love me.
We're strangers, you understand?
His suspicion will change to tolerance.
You saved my life. Why?
I need to look at another face, even as ugly as yours.
Tolerance will lead to friendship.
We should open up a little place here. I could ruin the food. You could scare away the customers.
And with that friendship will come an overwhelming responsibility.
You must be a parent.
Don't get around, Jerry.
You must take my place.
Protecting a life he values more than his own. Dennis Quaid, Louis Gossett Jr., Wolfgang Peterson's Enemy Mine.
Cult classic.
A cult classic, man. With the
because no one cared.
Louis Gossett Jr., Dennis Quaid. Dennis Quaid is one of those actors, man. Like, I always like, he's had a really good career. He doesn't always get enough credit, you know?
Yeah.
In the 80s, yeah.
Yeah, he's from our hometown. He's from Houston, Texas. His parents still live here, by the way, here in Houston. But, man, I this is a really enjoyable sci-fi film, one of those that you'll sit down on a Saturday afternoon. If it comes across on TV, you might stop and watch it because...
They never show it on TV. Who are you talking about?
not much anymore. They used to a lot. Yeah.
They did.
But it's
hard to find.
Yeah. And it's still not available in the U.S. on Blu-ray. That's not less than $100 because it's was some sort of limited release.
No one cared for it.
But yet you can get it on DVD for like $8. You just can't get it on Blu-ray. And but it's got its fans, you know, I think. And it's, like you said, kind of cult status.
Yeah, one sitting here with us. Mark.
Oh, man. God, call me out like that.
Ten other people nationwide.
Other people?
No, I saw the movie. I've seen the movie. Yeah. I'm giving you a hard time.
I know.
I remember seeing that movie. It left a really good impression on me. It was dark.
Yeah.
From what I remember. It was pretty dark and very interesting character development between... You know, both survivors of their prospective situations.
Yeah. So, have you ever seen it before, Matt? So, this will be a first-time watch for you. You'll be in for some. So, we'll talk that next week on the show as we'll go behind the scenes with a retrospective of Enemy Mine, a Space and Beyond Month continues.
Louis Gossett Jr. was the Morgan Freeman of the 80s, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. He was always the
Iron Eagle role. And all this stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Iron Eagle.
Yeah.
That's true.
The drill sergeant.
Yeah.
And Gentleman and the Officer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, he was in a lot of those.
He won an Oscar for that, I think.
I think he did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or nominated.
I think he was nominated, yeah. So, cool. Should be a fun one. So, that's next week on Space and Beyond Month Continues on the Rebel Radio Podcast. I just like to say Space and Beyond.
Space and Beyond. You know, it's
dramatic. You know, dramatic effect.
And beyond.
But, yeah, that's all we got as we continue forward towards May and Comic Palooza.
You didn't want to mail it in this time and just, like, rerun Transformers the movie as part of the Space and Beyond?
No, I know you. There's no mailing in on here, man. Maximum effort is definitely
maximum effort.
I'm joking. But, Starship Troopers is. Y'all did Starship Troopers already.
No, we haven't done it yet.
No, I want
Starship Troopers. Anyways, so we're going off base.
No, it's okay.
See y'all next week.
Yep. As always, go to therebelradiopodcast.com. Follow us on all apps. Leave us a review. And follow us on Twitter at Rebel Radio Pod. And we always appreciate it. This has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
This is Long.
LT Prime.
LT Prime. LT Primatron.
Long. Evil Dr. Tran. Take me to the your man leader. With many names.
Yes.
Take me to your leader.
Until next week. As always, thanks for listening. And just go there and do it.
Do it.
Hey, you're listening to Rebel Radio Podcast. And this is Jay Muse. Snooch to the Nooch. Go there and do it.
This is Booker T, Hall of Famer, and you're listening to Rubber Radio. Now, can you dig that, sucker?